This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's just about 6:37 and you're listening to the Evening Edition. I'm Lee Chui Lin. We've been spending this hour and really much of the 5 o'clock hour from Pulpit Pulpit Parliament onwards talking about the issue of drink driving or driving under the influence, because it is one that, well, you know, has come up quite a few times, and today was actually addressed in Parliament itself. And we're seeing the Cabinet approve harsher punishments for people who are found guilty, and that includes things like 100,000 ringgit fine for the first offence, as well as, you know, 10-year jail sentence. So we spent that first part of the show talking with criminal lawyer K.A. Ramu about our rights in the event that we are pulled over and questioned at a roadblock. But now we wanted to actually look at what constitutes a DUI offence and how we can gauge an individual's threshold. Because if you Google this, it varies wildly. Everyone's tolerance is different. It's based on factors like body weight, for instance. So we want to know how this works so that drivers can stay safe on the road and protect others. And it's also important to know legally, because the benchmark for acceptable alcohol levels could change. I think they are talking about actually changing it from that 0.08%. The government wants to lower the maximum alcohol content for drivers from 35 micrograms per 100 mils of breath to 22 micrograms per 100 mils of breath. Now, what that actually means in practice for somebody who doesn't have a breathalyzer is, I think, a tough one to answer. So that's what we want to dive into, because the new limits would apply for alcohol content measured via the blood and urine as well, which would align Malaysia's road safety standards with global ones as set by the WHO. I think that an important point here is also one about accountability, because I think this feeds into that conversation. Something that is often said is, if you know that you've been drinking and drive, if you know that you've been drinking, just don't get on the road, don't drive at all. And you also see, you know, the flip side of that, which is people saying, I understand my own tolerance best. But I think what we're seeing is that when it comes to the law, tolerance is not the issue. It is a question of whether or not you cross that threshold. So even if you feel like you have, you know, you're unaffected, nothing's wrong, everything is great, my reflexes are fine, if you cross that threshold, then that automatically puts you into, that automatically gets you in trouble. It automatically endangers other people as well. But beyond that, when it comes to endangering other people, how you feel matters. So beyond the realm of legality, if you're somebody who is I'm sorry about the phrase, but if you're somebody who is a lightweight, then even if your blood alcohol content is below what is legally allowed, you may still not be safe to get on the road. So it is these sorts of things that we're trying to understand a bit better. And we're going to do so right after this with Dr. Amir Siddiq, a consultant psychiatrist at University Malaya Medical Centre. If you'd like to weigh in with your thoughts, or if you have questions on actually assessing whether you're fit to drive, whether your friend is fit to drive, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:44 and you're listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn. We've been spending this hour talking about drink driving, earlier about the harsher punishments, and now we wanted to look at being able to tell when you've crossed that legal threshold, or for that matter, when you've crossed just a fitness threshold in terms of being able to drive if you have been, if you've been drinking. You can let us know if you have any questions. You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're now crossing over to Dr. Amir Siddiq, consultant psychiatrist at University Malaya Medical Centre. Dr. Amir, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, hi. Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I hope you're well too. So the government, as we've been saying, plans to enforce harsher penalties against those who've been found to be drink driving. Do you think that this is a good move to curb DUI issues here in Malaysia?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I've been advocating this for quite some time. So it's high time that we're actually doing a little bit more in terms of driving under the influence.
very briefly, we spoke earlier with another guest who was a criminal lawyer, K. Ramu, and he actually disagreed with the harsher penalties and said that he would rather there be a focus on education. What do you make of that? I mean, why do you think that harsher penalties are the way to go as opposed to education?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to understand the first thing is that if you're going to drink, do not drive. So education is one part of it, but at the same time, you've also got to be, it's got to have a deterrent because people's lives are at stake. So I think in terms of education, yes, it's important, but I think harsher penalties for those who drive under the influence should also be put in place as well. So that's why I've come to that conclusion. And also, this is what's been happening overseas. In overseas, for example, if you're caught drunk driving, you automatically can even lose your license, depending on the severity of the situation that one gets. So, of course, I don't know whether we have a demerit system on board, but, for example, in New Zealand, you actually can get demerit to the point that you cannot drive. And if you've gotten into a bad accident as a result of drinking under influence, then definitely you might be disallowed from driving at all on that first particular incident. So those are some of the penalties that have been put in place in other countries.
So can you tell us what the current official alcohol limits are for drivers here in Malaysia? Because I think we keep seeing this number and all the milligrams and the percentages, but what does that look like, or what is it in practice?
So basically the current number that's often cited is 0.08, and this is the number that's, in a way legal. Anything below 0.08 is technically legal to be driving on the roads. However, I think this number is still too high. In New Zealand particularly and Australia, they've put it down to 0.05. Because what we're actually seeing that once the number is above 0.05, you're going to get some negative consequences of alcohol in the system. So these are blood alcohol concentrations that we're talking with these numbers. And it just means that the number of alcohol that's circulating in the blood that might result in a certain impairments or consequences of your drinking as a result of your drinking. So when you're above 0.08, then you're going to see more impairment that's going to happen. And some of the impairments include things like motor skill reduction among them, and of course, off balance. So you don't want to be driving if your level of alcohol is beyond that particular concentration. However, at the same time, between 0.05 to 0.08, also you're going to see some level of impairment. So I think the advice is that if you are drinking, do not drive at all.
So can we talk about the difference between the limits that you've just covered and someone's tolerance level for alcohol? Because I understand the message of, if you've been drinking, don't drive at all. But there will always be, or hopefully not always, but I think in most of our lives, we will have experienced somebody, or even ourselves, saying, I've had very little, I think I'm okay. And that's because you feel that your tolerance level is fine.
Yeah, so I think this is where it gets a little bit complex in putting numbers, right? Because how you process alcohol depends on a variety of factors. For example, age, and particularly the health of your liver also makes a big difference in how much you actually process the alcohol that you're consuming. Gender also plays a part. Whether you've had a meal or not plays a part. Whether you're on certain medications or you're taking other maybe prescribed or other drugs also plays a part. So it's very hard for us to say that, I just drank a drink and I'm okay. Because, for example, ethnicity also plays a part. We know that for certain oriental groups, particularly in our country, it'd be the Chinese or people with Chinese descent, they might have a certain deficiency in an enzyme that actually breaks alcohol. So that means if you're consuming, say, a drink, your levels might be much, much higher than somebody without that particular deficiency. So, your level and my level then might be different, even though we might be, say, the same group and the same family. So it's very hard for us to quantify exactly to say that, my one drink is okay or not okay. So I think that's why I said that the advice is that, and I think the advice should be that if you are drinking or you will be drinking tonight, then, don't drive as a result of that. Get a cab or get a friend to actually drive you back.
Is it fair then to say, just to kind of close this point off, because we did hear earlier from a caller who suggested that maybe in bars and such, we could have infographics stating, you know, if you've had X amount of drinks, then this puts you wherever. So is it fair to say, and I think I might know the answer, that we can never really have this assessment in any fair or objective way?
Well, I think it's a good idea. To be fair, I think the first message should be, if you drink, don't drive. Yeah, that's the first message I think that should get across. The second message is that if you're going to be drinking, then at least find a designated driver. You know, in Malaysia, we often hear people, you know, five people go for a drink and five people go back on their own. And sadly, five people might have come in their same cars, right? Overseas, if you're going to be drinking five people, one person will probably not be drinking on that night. You know, the rule is that the guy has an OJ, orange juice, so he's not drinking. He's going to take his five friends there, and he's going to bring them back safely. So that's the first, I think, the first message. The second message that we often see is that if you're going to be, and this is where the infographics can come in, is that people need to know the kind of drinks that they're drinking and what constitute one standard drink. Because I think what's also lacking at the moment is that not all alcohol are the same. Yeah? If you're a person who drinks beer compared to wine, compared to liquor, the concentration of alcohol is different. The amount that you take per standard drink is also going to be different. I'll give you an example. For liquor, it's just 30 mils in your glass, if you're going to use a glass. But it's not going to be the same as a glass of beer, for example, to equal to one standard drink. Yeah, so we that probably would be a good one to put as an infographic. Now, overseas as well, your bartenders are actually quite trained to see if someone is looking like he's in the unsafe level of drinking. He's starting to slur in his speech. He's starting to trip over, for example. Basically, he's had too much to drink, and it becomes that he's a bit unsafe to be, you know, walking around. So they've actually been trained to sort of deny or refuse drinking to these people. If they see this person is going to go and drive back by his own, they've also been trained to actually stop him and actually get him a cab to be sent home. So, you know, I think that probably might be where the education might come in. But I think the first message should be that if you're going to be drinking tonight, you know, then make sure that you get somebody else to drive you back home. And definitely don't come, you know, in your own car and expect to go back with your same car as well.
And is there any sort of waiting period that one, say if you have had, I understand all these issues to do with standard measurements, and I think that that is extremely fair. But assuming that somebody does think, okay, you know, I have had very little and I'm going to wait it out now and quietly sip my water in a corner, is there some sort of timeline that people can look to?
Yeah, so the good thing about alcohol in terms of the science is that it's broken down in a very constant fashion. And that's why, you know, when we're in medical school, we can actually calculate in a way how much alcohol would be reducing over what period of time. So if, you know, we take the standard healthy liver and for some reason you manage to see your blood alcohol level at 0.08, or maybe 0.081. So you're actually unsafe to be drinking. Unsafe to be driving, and then you decide that you don't want to, you know, put anyone's harm way, and you want to be as clean as possible. Yeah, it'll probably take about 5 to 6 hours before the blood alcohol level goes back to a very minuscule level. So that's basically you stop your drinking, and then you wait out for about 5 to 6 hours. This is provided that your liver is healthy, because if your liver is unhealthy, you're going to be breaking down slowly. This is provided that you don't have all the other enzyme deficiencies. So there's a lot of factors that come in place, but it's going to be about 5 to 6 hours, if not a bit longer, before you're technically clean. So that's a whole night already.
Yeah. So, there are practicality issues there for sure.
Yeah.
I wanted to also touch on the issue of breathalyzers, because I do think that right now, with the roadblocks, there is going to be an added discomfort to the idea of using breathalyzers with COVID-19 being of concern. Is it safe?
Well, it depends on the breathalyzer that you're using. Again, breathalyzers, there are many types. There's the one that, you know, you blow into you know, this machine, and they'll give you the blood alcohol concentration. There's another one that's used overseas where you're literally just talking, like we're talking on the telephone, and you're expected to be counting to, like, say, 10. And then that particular device will also be able to detect. So it really depends on the breathalyzer that you're actually using. And I suspect they'll be using disposable mouthpieces, if that's the thing. So, again, you know, the best advice would be, you know, there's nothing to, you know, you're probably going to be stopped, and also, of course, asked to use that breathalyzer if you're going to be looking a bit suspicious. So, you know, probably best not to be, you know, like I said, drinking and driving.
Best to avoid looking suspicious is the message here also. Can I touch on something which I think has come up through a number of messages, which is that we are looking at drink driving because that's what MPs are talking about. That's the message we're hearing from the government. That's also what we're seeing in the roadblocks. But there is also this question about why aren't we paying as much attention to other things that would fall into this category of under the influence, namely drugs. Mm-hmm. Do you think that there is an issue there?
I think it's always been an issue. I mean, for many years, I've heard of people, you know, there have been accidents as a result of certain drivers being under the influence, particularly certain drugs. So, again, I don't see where the argument comes from because, you know, of course, all of us, we would like people on the road to be, you know, not drinking and not taking any drugs before they decide to be on the road. In fact, we'd also want them to hopefully be, you know, not taking any medications that might cause them to be a little bit sedated, for example, because that also poses a risk. So there are definitely, you know, things that people would like. But I think the message is, you know, hopefully we don't have those people on the road and we need to do as much as we can to reduce that risk.
I think the concern here was really the focus on the harsher penalties, but I think, or for that matter, on campaigns. So I think the question is more to do with, do you think that there is enough of a focus on drugs along with drinking?
I think there's been a lot of focus on drugs. I'm not, you know, in terms of drugs and driving, probably not very specific, but drugs in general, yes, there's a lot of it. I think definitely it's a lot more compared to, you know, alcohol and the consequences of alcohol, including driving under the influence of alcohol.
Dr. Ameh, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Yep, thank you very much, Lynn.
That was Dr. Ameh Siddiq, consultant psychiatrist at University Malaya Medical Center, really coming through very strongly with the message of, well, if you've been drinking, then just don't drive. Although on a larger scale, we were talking about trying to understand a bit more about the maximum alcohol content when it comes to what is in our blood as well as our breath. If you have any thoughts or questions, you can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, on to the messages. We have quite a few. So first, this from Munif Malik, who says, I don't buy this whole confidence in my threshold notion. If you drink, you get an Uber or a designated driver. It's as simple as that. I don't care if you can drink like 10 sailors. It's still an unnecessary risk. Why in the world take it? You won't put your family on the line even for a minute chance. Yet when it's about others possibly getting mowed down by your car, yeah, in my threshold, I trust, you know? Don't blame the government then for harsher punishments if that's how carefree the drinking scene is. Ro, meanwhile, says targeting only drunk drivers when the majority speed is like arresting the few topless for indecent exposure in a nudist colony. And that's something, again, this idea of, I think, enforcement as well as talking about all the several other ways that people get into trouble on the road. It's an incredibly important part of the conversation. Thank you to everybody for sending in your messages. We'll get to as many of them as we can. In the meantime, though, we do have to head to the 7 o'clock news. You're listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.